Morning, folks. Thanks for coming. This is a panel on avatar-based marketing in synthetic worlds. I've got a bunch of notes that I'm going to use to kick things off with so I don't forget any essential details. And then we're going to move forward in a fairly conversational manner. If anybody has questions, there's a mic there, and I think we're going to probably, given that you're going to have to step up to the mic to ask the questions, I may save everything till the end. I was hoping to have people be able to sort of interject as we move along, but I think it's probably a better idea if y'all go up to the mic when we're done. So, all right. My name is Tony Walsh. I have been writing about Second Life for about 3 years. That's pretty much the bulk of my virtual world exposure, unless you count Dungeons and Dragons, which is like a text-based or tabletop-based kind of virtual environment, predating the digital. I should probably read my notes because I'm totally going to forget important stuff here. So, oh yeah, show of hands. Who here is already an avatar in a virtual environment of some kind? Holy Moses! All right, that's cool. Who's logged into Second Life right now? Stop hogging the bandwidth. there.com. Anyone in there? No. Habbo. No. Silence. Neopets. No? Puzzle Pirates? Okay. Well, those are the kinds of virtual worlds we're going to be talking about today and discussing how marketing efforts are directed towards or actually use avatars to get messages across. Anyone here operating a virtual world or synthetic world? Oh, okay. All right. Anyone planning to do marketing in these spaces? That's cool. That's very cool. I mean, that's pretty telling right there, right? Like, I think in the last maybe 8 or 9 months, we've seen so much interest in this just completely ramp up. That's good to see. And anyone who's doing it right now, like a couple people, a few people? Okay, cool. All right, so I got to do my little finish up my intro, and then I'm going to introduce everybody else, so they'll have a chance to self-introduce. What do I need to cover here? I'm based in Toronto, Canada. I work in social media and online games. I blog at Clickable Culture about virtual worlds and mostly Second Life, but virtual worlds and sort of technology and cultural intersections. And my first experience with virtual world marketing is probably The Sims Online when they tried to bring, or they did bring in McDonald's. And I sort of proposed in this magazine article like a citizen revolt against McDonald's to like protest it in The Sims Online. No one ever did it, but it was kind of a fun idea. Anyway, so today I'm joined by some very knowledgeable panelists from a bunch of different backgrounds. And I think I'll let each of them sort of take the mic for a few minutes and introduce themselves, let you know what their background is, what their interests are, how it relates to this space. And we'll start off with Paul Hemp.
Hi, I'm Paul Hemp, a senior editor at Harvard Business Review. I'd like to, I've written a little bit about this world. My other panelists are more familiar with it than I am. I'd actually like to do three things for my part here today. One, I'd like to raise the question that got me interested in this as a space initially. Two, I'd like to say why I think the question is important. And then during discussion, I'd like to suggest some tentative answers to the question. And I hope with the help of my panelists and people in the audience, augment some answers and get some new insights actually for myself as well. The question is this. How does a marketing message aimed at a consumer get refracted when it passes through the intermediary of that user's avatar, the avatar that the user has created to represent him or herself in a virtual space? Does the avatar act as kind of a prism that bends, that scatters, that changes in some way a real-world marketer's message? Now, I think that question, while a little conceptual, is actually pretty important. Some people would say that it's really kind of a meaningless question because, in fact, the user behind the avatar, the person who creates the avatar, actually has the real-world wallet in his or her real-world pocket, and that what's the avatar have to do with it? I think my thought is that the avatar represents something about that consumer that is important. Advertising has always targeted consumers' alter ego, you know, that kind of smiling, happy, terrifically popular person that is just waiting to emerge from the consumer's psyche with, of course, with the help of the advertised product. So here, the marketer doesn't have to hunt for that alter ego. It's on display. The person has created that new identity in the form of an avatar, which arguably can be segmented, can be targeted, can help you understand in some way the actual consumer behind it. And that's the topic that interests me.
Hello, I'm Linda Zimmer. I'm CEO and president of Marcom Interactive. We are a new media consulting company, and basically we operate in the social media space, helping corporations figure out what social media is all about and what it means to marketing, how it changes or refracts. And so my interest in this area actually dates back to text-based types of MUDs and MOOs. Those of you that are as old as I am probably remember those things. And so I've been in this space for a very long time, and where I'm spending most of my time right now is in Second Life, but also touching on some of the other virtual worlds and some of the new upcoming ones, that corporations are very interested just getting their feet wet in these virtual spaces, and what does it mean for marketing? What does it mean for new forms of communication? More importantly, what are these new content categories that are coming about that these virtual worlds make possible? Certainly the one-to-one marketing, the niche types of marketing are very important, but what I am finding is that once a marketer gets introduced to virtual worlds, is suddenly the social media space of wikis and blogs make a whole lot more sense. And that is because these are spatial, they're interactive in a way that the flat 2D web is not. And by being immersed in these environments, marketers are suddenly understanding what it means to connect to an audience. So I'm here to hopefully get some insights. I'm really interested to know what your thoughts, what your questions, what your insights, why you're here, so that we can kind of create a dialogue here about what is important, where is this going, and why is it important to marketers. Just one more comment. Like Paul, I'm very interested and have been doing quite a bit of research and market research study on the whole meaning of identity, and it goes, I think, really closely with what what Paul is saying about how does an avatar differ from the real-life person. And the identity issue is a big one, certainly for the consumer, if you will, but it's a big one for corporations and companies and marketers. Reputation management is extremely important. And so those are hopefully areas that we'll be able to at least touch on here today.
Hi, my name is Eric Gruber. I'm the manager of franchise development for MTV Networks Music and Logo Group. About a year ago, I helped launch Virtual Laguna Beach, and a few months ago, I launched Virtual Hills. I've been a producer at MTV for about 5 years now, working on for both their on-air, online, pretty much every platform that they have. I have probably avatars in lots of different virtual worlds, such as Habbo Hotel, Second Life, There.com, RuneScape, World of Warcraft, all these places. So I was brought on kind of to help design, develop, implement the virtual world strategy for MTV. I'm going to show you, because it's MTV, I'm going to show you a quick video about the Virtual Hills, and then showing what the cast, we bring the cast of The Hills, which is a reality show, top-rated reality show on MTV. We bring them into the Virtual Hills and kind of extend their roles on the show in the virtual world. I'll show you what their experience is like, and then I'll kind of take you through a little about what our kind of thoughts were on how to engage the audience into virtual worlds. So first I'll show the video, which is a cute video we did. We'll be right back.
were in the Virtual Hills tonight.
I honestly had no idea how it was going to be. Like, it's so real, and Aria looks so real, and it's really fun. It's not what I expected, but it's better than what I expected.
The first thing we all did was we dressed our avatars, and we put them in clothes that we would wear and would make the same hair color and everything.
And the outfits are really cute. A lot of girls had what Heidi wore to the VMAs, like the blue dress.
I tried to match what I was wearing tonight. I put it in like a red dress and a headband. And even a couple people said, like, oh, you're wearing a headband like you always do, which I guess I wear a lot of headbands.
Apparently I put on a bra for a fashion item.
Oh.
Am I wearing a bra? And someone sent me like a turtleneck because I didn't realize I was in a bra.
I just put on a pink top and then like a cute little party skirt, something that maybe I would wear out, and some black boots.
The virtual area looks exactly like the real area. The colors and the paintings and the bar and the layout, I think they did a good job.
From what I could see, it looked pretty much exactly like Aria. I think the best part about the Virtual Hills is that if people are fans of the show, they can sign on and kind of live it virtually.
Oh, this girl says she loves the hills. That's nice.
Like seeing our fans and being able to talk to people and really like connect with them and that kind of level that we wouldn't be able to otherwise.
Some people on there are like from Australia, from New York, Georgia, Illinois. Like I was talking to people from everywhere in the world.
They were just asking questions about the show and they're so excited about this season and I'm just wanting to know how life is before and after the hills.
People ask me a lot about Paris and what I did in Paris and how it was and like certain sightseeing things that I saw.
The best part is the dancing. You can make your character dance and do like the giddy up or the hoedown.
The most fun was the handstand that I did just randomly, but
I did the hey hey a lot.
Like that.
It's fun, and you can, like, sit down, make out with people.
Ooh, whoa, he's cute. Hey. Me and Adrina made out with boys.
You're kissing him!
Oh, my God, I got so mad.
Okay, stop, end kiss.
That's what I'm nervous.
Oh, my God.
I think that people are going to start making friends off of it, honestly.
It's definitely easier to meet your fans virtually. I think that people are probably more comfortable saying what they want to say because it's through computers.
It's kind of a unique opportunity that you don't get with a lot of other shows where it's, you know, you have a chance to go in and talk to the people that you watch every week. So it's kind of like one-on-one time that we get with people who are fans of the show and watch it.
Yeah!
Oh, look at us!
Next time I go into the Virtual Hills, I'll be talking about like a big event or a big party that's going on and just kind of let people know about it.
Since I work at Epic Records, whenever there's music events, I'll be the one participating. It'll be fun.
In the Virtual Hills, we have fashion challenges which I get to judge, so I'll be back on to do those, which should be pretty cool.
I'm really looking forward to participating again as a guest judge on Lauren's Fashion Challenge.
I'll see you next time in the Virtual Hills.
Right, so cool. So you can see there's the level of immersion you can literally make out with the stars.
That was last year's panel on sex and gaming, man.
It's proved wildly successful for both the cast, for audience members. The cast, we can't keep them out of there. We have music guests every week who really we have to rip them away from the computer when they're in there really talking with their fans. The cast themselves have become really, you know, attached to their avatars.
Do they ever go on, I mean, on their own, or is it always a scheduled event?
Usually it's a scheduled event. We've had bands come in who have logged in without us, you know, kind of. But we give them their passwords. They have their passwords. They can log in whenever we want. Their names are, you know, they're signified that there are the official people. Now I just want to bring you, and I'm going to do this really quickly. It's kind of a PowerPoint about kind of our strategy of how to bring a mass audience, a really big television audience, into a virtual world and kind of why MTV did it. So Project Leapfrog was the initiative that I joined about a year ago in franchise development. And it was really to build lifestyle brands, to engage the audience on a much deeper level than just watching a half-hour TV show, which is, 30 minutes a week. Even if it is appointment TV, it's 30 minutes a week. And we wanted to see what best new mediums that we can extend that relationship with our audience for both us and for them. So it's obviously via our multi-platform network, taking them from television to our broadband channel into the virtual world to enjoy, so we can engage them on a deeper level, and they can engage back with us on a deeper level. We saw a million web companies come out, a million new media technologies come out, and we tried to pick and choose and leverage the best ones that fit with our brand and fit with the shows. We were a very small team inside of a very big company. I was the third member of the team. There was about five when we launched Virtual Laguna Beach. There's about seven now. We work with outside partners to really help, but it was really important that we really kind of stepped outside the company for about 6 months and got this done. And we have a long-term, not only a short-term roadmap, but a clear long-term roadmap. Focus, again, was to connect the linear TV experience with a much deeper, engaged experience to really create a medium that's a hybrid medium that really ties them close together. So you watch the show and you can go in and engage deeper on a different platform. Sometimes at the same time, sometimes when the show's not on, pretty much all the time. So I'll just get to the experiment. The test were, first was Virtual Laguna Beach. We launched in August of 2006. With the premiere of the show, the concept was, I don't know if you know the show. Laguna Beach is a reality show, one of our top-rated reality shows that follows about 12, 15 high school young adults, boys and girls, as they go through the latter half of their high school career. So they celebrate big events, spring break, prom, they winter formal. So the idea was that as the cast members go to spring break and go to winter formal and go to prom and go to graduation, the user can actually go to spring break, go to winter formal as their own customized avatar within a social setting as groups and really live the show that they're watching on TV. So the world expanded with the show. So we recreated their locations that they went to. The next was Virtual Hills, which is a spin-off of Laguna Beach. It's after Lauren Conrad, who was in that video, graduated from Laguna Beach High School. She moves to L.A., and she goes to fashion school, and she goes to fashion school as an intern at Teen Vogue. So we recreated a part of the Hollywood Hills, where she lives in the social Hollywood scene, the L.A. nightlife, She's got a group of friends, fashion designers and music people. And so the concept here in the Virtual Hills is that we extended their roles that they had. They were going to school, they were working, they were living in the Hollywood. We extended their roles into the virtual world. So Lauren is a fashion designer and she runs fashion challenges. Audrina, who works at Epic Records, hosts a music series. Heidi, who's a party promoter, knows where all the VIP clubs are, where all the real clubs are. So we literally recreated the town of Laguna Beach and a section of the Hollywood Hills. We modeled it. We went to the towns. We talked to the shop owners. We used our relationships from the TV show, and we built them out. As accurate as we could, Laguna Beach we pretty much built out the shows, it didn't really make sense to build out the actual geography of the show, of the city. So we built out what's featured in the show. They are connected worlds. You can take your avatar. You can literally walk up the street pretty much, from Laguna Beach to, to the Hollywood, just like you can do in real life. So the concept was watching the drama, living and sharing the drama. How do you go about doing this? And I'll go through this real quick.
Eric, I think we should probably move on to Lauren at this point.
Let's do it.
Thanks.
Yep.
Hi. So I am Lauren Wheeler, and I'm the project manager at Three Rings Design, based in San Francisco. Three Rings is mostly known for Yo-Ho-Ho Puzzle Pirates, which was our first game, which launched in 2003. It is a massive multiplayer online role-playing game with pirates that look a lot like Lego people. And the actual gameplay is based on casual puzzle games, very Tetris-similar sort of games. The game's been largely popular. At this point, the last time I checked, I think we have about 2.7 million registered pirates. We don't have that many concurrent players, and we definitely don't have that many paying players, but we have a number of players who give us lots of money. Our first model was subscription-based, about $10 a month, and at some point that changed into doubloons, which is a microcurrency within the game, and the revenue shot up unbelievably. People were willing to pay for things like swords for their pirates or to enter tournaments to try to win familiar so that they could have a blue octopus on the shoulder of their pirate. So that's done really well. And let's see if we can switch to the green card one.
Three.
So this is the website for Puzzle Pirates. It's now available not only as a downloadable installer, but it can be played launched out of a browser. It's a Java-based game. Just a couple of months ago, we finally launched Bang Howdy, which is a new online game. It's also a multiplayer game, though it has huge single-player facets, which are being released on a regular basis. So this is a tactical strategy game instead of a role-playing game. The idea is that you create a team of units, and you play in different towns. We have Frontier Town available now and Indian Trading Post, and it's a very wacky sort of steampunk environment in which you do things like rustle cattle, so you're competing with other players to brand cattle, or you're trying to build totem poles. So it's a lot of fun. It's a very different online experience. There are definitely a lot of community pieces to the game, but it's easier to jump in and jump out. It's not as much of a time sink as role-playing games. But what we finally got around to announcing on Thursday at the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, it was codenamed Metasoy for a while, because we were thinking of it as the son of Yo-Ho-Ho, but it's world.com, because we like puns, and we are the keepers of the peas. So what we have here is a bunch of avatars all moving around online. The idea behind world.com is that people love social networking, and they also like to have various representations of themselves, but sometimes they want more control over what that looks like. So the idea is that we'll have player-created content, which can be marketed to other players, and a way of actually cashing out using a similar microcurrency model that we have in Puzzle Pirates and Bang Howdy. Except for this, we'll actually be trying to encourage people to build games. That's fundamentally what we want, is gameplay within the world. And so far, you know, a lot of what you're seeing on the screen right now, this is player-created content. This is not anything that we've made. I don't know where the monkey came from. That's definitely not anything we've created. It's exciting to see people operating, basically creating these things already.
Now, Lauren, can users sell stuff to each other in this right now?
That's the idea. So right now we're in private alpha, and this probably we'll be inviting more and more people as the months pass, and we hope to launch it by the summer. Right now we've got a few people invited, a lot of Puzzle Pirates players, a lot of people who are wiki admins for Puzzle Pirates and Bang Howdy have been invited, and they're making games in Flash, they're making avatars in Flash, and we're giving them a lot of our code base from Puzzle Pirates to do this. So we've got a few games already that are easy to hack up if you can program in ActionScript.
How personalized can you make your avatar? I mean, do you have to pull from options, or can you do both in appearance or attitude?
You can make whatever you want. I mean, right now what you're seeing on the screen is, you know, some people have created these avatars themselves. Some of them can be purchased from a catalog. But the number of things that are available is pretty huge. So,
and does that catalog include user-created content as well as...
Everything gets moved to the catalog. So a lot of this, some of this is created by Three Rings designers. Some of these were actually created by users just within the last few days.
And what's the name of the currency in this?
Right now we're going with Flow for the attention currency, which is
nice.
What you earn for playing games, for chatting, for interacting in any way within the world. The attention currency at some point will be translatable into gold, which is our working title now for what will actually be the currency you can purchase.
Okay, well, I'd like to rewind a little bit and just sort of talk about, you know, say, for example, Paul, like how in the world did the Harvard Business Review kind of get its feet wet in virtual worlds? Like what introduced you to this aspect, this business aspect in virtual worlds?
Just very, very quickly, I think it was this idea that if there is an alternate identity, is that identity in some way a shadow consumer that that marketers can market to? Is part of your model, Lauren? I mean, is there any opportunity for people to come in and introduce branded type stuff in this at all?
Yes. I mean, one of the things that we are encouraging is for people to jump into the world and create a brand.
But I mean, it could be a real world brand, or this would be just within the game itself.
I mean, we've thought about it, and it's possible, and we're not going to say no. I mean, we basically want to make it very democratic, though. So if a random Flash developer wants to go in and create a brand and make a lot of avatars, they can do that. If McDonald's wants to go in and make a bunch of stuff, then they can do that, too. I don't think we'll be arguing with them about it. We haven't really decided on advertising per se, but there's definitely the space for people to do so within the world.
And I mean, just the fact that you have a catalog there where there's creations, I mean, it'd be pretty easy for somebody to actually establish a brand in connection
yes.
with each one of those avatars.
Yes.
Like, presumably they're uploading a picture of a thumbnail there.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, right now there are brands and themes that exist, and a lot of those have been established by our artists, but we're leaving the space open for all of our players to do the same thing.
Okay. Why don't I just go down the table and maybe say, like, Linda, you know, you're sort of the chief protagonist behind the business communicators of Second Life. So maybe, you know, you had your background in MUDs and text-based virtual worlds. How did that sort of transition to a business interest in this area?
I have no idea.
Okay.
It was an evolution, really. I've been involved in the interactive industry for 20 years. So it was very much an evolution. But I will say that I think one of the reasons that we made a decision to kind of move very aggressively in this space is the social media. You know, with wikis and blogs becoming so big over the last couple of years, the evolution of the web is certainly going this way, mm-hmm. both to the social aspects as well as to the more immersive and three-dimensional. And I won't say that organizations or brands, you know, are jumping on board with any great enthusiasm. We certainly have those innovators out there that are doing this, but most of them are sitting back and watching right now what's going on. And certainly Paul's article and other things that have been happening in the media have really made this have kind of given this a lot of credibility. And so we will see the marketing aspects of this with the number of hands that were raised here. We can see that this is moving very, very quickly.
Yeah, just as a bit of a backgrounder, actually, Paul wrote an article. The title of it was Avatar-Based Marketing, wasn't it? Yeah, so that was in my opinion, it really was a catalyst for interest. You know, if you'd been sort of sitting on the fence thinking about, you know, what can we get out of these virtual worlds? Are there opportunities here? I think that Paul's article really helped to mainstream that idea and get communicate that out, that these are places where, you know, it is possible to do marketing. You know, there are avatars there who are willing to consume brands outside of the sort of native brands of places like Second Life in there. So, Eric, you shot a fashion show in Second Life, but do you have, like sort of an earlier interest in this area previous to SL?
I think it's video games. I've been a video gamer all my life, and online kind of. I was in BBS's and Prodigy and America Online and the Sony Sierra Online's Imagination Network when I was a kid. I think my life has evolved online, you know, since I was 10 years old.
What was your like first exposure to, say, like the idea of, you know, this is a space where, you know, we can persuade avatars to, you know, be attracted to our brand or introduce them to a brand?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean,
thank you.
I don't. I mean, it's. I don't know what my first, it was probably Second Life, to tell you the truth. I was early involved in Second Life, but I was probably swayed as an avatar before then, didn't even realize, or just as a person online of, you know, dealing, you know, with kind of a, you know, in chat rooms as an alter ego, you know, just understanding, you know, going to an, you know, when I remember when I was a kid going to an MTV themed chat room, you know, and kind of having a branded environment and talking about MTV content is something that I remember doing. It's funny that I end up working at MTV, but it's, but that's the Second Life was probably my first one, avatar that I really got, you know, kind of immersed in and saw the potential, I guess, of it.
Okay, and Lauren, you have you were with TSO for a while, right?
I wasn't on TSO, but
that's The Sims Online, by the way.
I did start in games at Maxis, working on. I was doing localization mostly on the final expansion packs for the original Sims and SimCity. And then I moved into production on The Sims 2. So I was writing a lot of the text that went into the catalog, producing features, doing character design for the shipping neighborhoods. So obviously that's very much an in-world marketing sort of game, even though that wasn't an online version of the game.
And how did resident-to-resident transactions evolve in Puzzle Pirates? Because in Puzzle Pirates, basically, like, users can set up their own stores and sell their own merchandise.
Right.
So is that something that you'd always planned on, or was that rolled out as there became
that
a demand
was,
for
that
it?
That was always planned on. Mm-hmm. I mean, just as you can be a pirate, you can be a trader, and you can be a merchant. You can run stores, you can be a tailor, and a lot of what we're working on right now is trying to sort of flesh out the actual puzzles for the game, to come up with a tailoring puzzle, to create an ironmongering puzzle.
So
we have
crafting.
A lot of these now, but we're creating more of them. And it's basically just to give players a fuller experience when they do choose to be merchants.
And the user businesses there are actually pretty healthy, right? Like,
yeah,
when I went in, I was like,
I mean, there's a pretty active economy going on, and we're pretty hands-off as far as that's concerned.
Okay, I thought maybe we can talk a little bit about this identity issue. You know, places like Puzzle Pirates, it's a fantasy environment, so I think that there's a lot, you know, the player maybe sort of feel freer to express themselves in a fantasy way, you know, like if they want the monkey on their shoulder or the blue octopus or whatever. Whereas, you know, I think in more freeform virtual worlds, like maybe like there in Second Life, there's a... you know, this whole immersion versus augmentation thing where, you know, maybe I'm using Second Life as I'm expressing my true self in a virtual world, or I'm sort of, it's an adjunct to my day-to-day business activities or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, Paul, like, what do you mean by shadow consumer? Maybe you can elaborate a little about that.
I think it's important to distinguish between two streams of thought here. One is, we've talked about 3D virtual spaces as a venue for real-world marketers to go in and peddle their wares, basically. And it seems like there is a lot of power around that because people are so engaged in these spaces. In the case of Second Life, they're so engaged, they've actually created a lot of the things in it, and the opportunity for engagement with a brand is tremendous. That's a big issue, and that's one of the things that you know, Linda helps companies work on. There is this sub-question, and it is kind of a sub-question at this point, but I think it's really interesting. If you're a company that goes into a place like Second Life and tries to in some way do brand building or possibly even to sell products or services, does it matter that the people you're selling to aren't the real people, that they're avatars? Does the fact that they does it give you some sort of insight into consumers' desires that you wouldn't otherwise have?
Yeah, are they showing you through their avatar what they really want to be, or are they showing you what they, you know, how they feel? Are they showing you what they truly are? Like, what, you know, Linda, this is a question you posed to a business meeting group
Absolutely.
In SL. So what
right.
happened with that?
Well, there's a couple of market research companies in Second Life who are operating there, creating panels of consumers. And we have this big debate about, do we need their real-life demographic information, or are we actually marketing to the avatar? And there is no agreement on that by any means. there is this perception that I'm a marketer in there and I'm marketing directly to the needs and solutions of the avatar. And that's a very different business model than in, if you're in there as a brand marketing to the person behind the avatar. I actually think that there is a case for both. You fly as an avatar in Second Life. Just a brand, a very simple branding thing is, most people don't put signs on the tops of their buildings in Second Life. Well, if you're flying over the top of the building, you might want to brand, you know, that's what I mean by different needs. That's a very simplistic example, but the point is that avatars have different needs, and if you are actually engaging in commerce in the virtual world for the purpose of that avatar, you're going to look at the avatar differently than if you are a real world brand trying to extend your brand into the world.
Mm-hmm. I kind of would take a different, slightly different perspective. I think, and it's different for different platforms, but that you're always kind of marketing to the person behind it, the typist behind the avatar. That no matter what, you don't separate the avatar from the person. They've really become one and the same, same kind of entity. And there's obviously, you know, there's platforms, there's different technological limitations to it, but that you, the marketing is, you really want the person as much as they're trying to, they're expressing their desires and their needs and their wants in there. They're in there for a reason. It's themselves that you always have to keep in mind, that you're marketing to people and it's their experiences that will help or hurt your brand in what you do.
I think one of the, and this is, there obviously always is the puppeteer behind the puppet. But one of the things that one of the women in the video said is that you say things in that space that you might not say in the real world. Well, there's one tiny example of the avatar acting differently from the person behind it. So if is there an opportunity possibly for your avatar to experiment and try out with products or a particular racy line of clothing, just to use kind of the most obvious example, that the real world user wouldn't do, but having tried it out in this space, having received the compliments of their avatar friends, is there a chance that the person behind the avatar might be more comfortable with that product or whatever and then buy it in the real world? That's a way in which, obviously, there's always the real person behind there. It's the relationship between the person and their avatar that I think is so interesting, and they're not the same. They're not exactly the same. They're different.
I see we've got a bunch of people lined up with questions ready. They seem eager. I'm wondering if we can just break for a few questions. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, great. You want to go ahead?
Time ago, when I first started Second Life, I was actually maybe about a year and a half ago. It was at a time where everybody flew everywhere. Mm-hmm. That was in the olden days. Now you just seem to TP everywhere, and you don't have to
TP
fly.
TP means teleport, not toilet paper.
There we go. So anyway, all that being said, hi, my name is Tuna Oddfellow, and I'm a Second Life citizen, and also I do a little bit of freelance. Reverend work. I'm Reverend Tuna Oddfellow, and I started in Second Life and realizing this was my Second Life path when a friend of mine who I spent every night with and went out dancing with and whatnot, she in real life passed away. And I wanted to create a space to actually be able to memorialize her and be able to have her friends get together. And next thing I knew, I was a week later from the time that she passed in real life, after going through my own mourning period with this person I had never met in real life, I was the person who was speaking for her and being the reverend doing this. And people thought that I did this well enough that they said, a month later, they said, I'd like you to do my wedding. And next thing I knew, I was doing Magic Touch Wedding Masters, and I decided right there and then that even though this was something which it's not my first life. It's not something that I'm doing to get rich, doing weddings, that I was going to have an ethics system about it.
There's an aspect of persuasion, though, to what you're talking about. So, I mean, I'm just trying to pull this into the topic at hand here. So, you know, do you think that in some way, you know, your interactions with these avatars is a sort of a persuasive relationship where maybe you're trying to establish, you know, a practice for yourself?
Well, I'm trying to establish a practice for myself as a person who does a full-scale custom wedding business and says, I'm specifically not catering to the people who do microwave weddings in Second Life. You meet somebody, you go, oh, wow, she's cute. She goes, oh, wow, he's cute, or she's cute, or they're cute. And then you go, let's get married. And a week later that happens, and it's snap into place. That's not what I'm about. I sit down with people. The few weddings that I've done, it's about counseling them and making sure they understand that there's only first life emotions and that somebody can potentially be hurt, and to make them understand. And this is the decision that Tuna Oddfellow and I together made, was we're going to handle this from the standpoint of a sense of ethics about it. And I find business people in Second Life, a lot of them have great ethics. The people who I like doing business with the most are the ones who do customer service, who will work with you and develop a relationship with you and then take you into their store and have the best line of clothing or whatnot.
Okay, so what we're hearing is that there's a definite emotional connection with avatars that is very real, right? And so you have to treat the people behind the avatars with a lot of respect. And probably the most successful Second Life businesses, as you're saying, are businesses that really have that one-to-one relationship with people and take the time to do customer service and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
As opposed to, you know, when some real-world businesses come into virtual worlds, they have kind of a colder approach, mm-hmm. right? Because they don't have the resources probably to do one-on-one with everybody. Do you have a question for any of the panelists or just comments or...
Really, I'm commenting because it's something that really moved me, was just the whole, I had to be here because this is something that excites me. And
great. Well, thanks for coming.
Thank you very much.
All right. Terrific. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Betsy Book.
Hey, Betsy.
And I'm the Director of Product Management at There.com. Hello, everyone.
Thanks for coming.
I have a question for all of you. In your collective experience so far, have you found that there are some brands or types of brands that seem to work better in virtual worlds than others?
Hmm. Maybe we'll put that to you guys first.
Can I go first?
Yeah.
Content. Companies that understand content, and I would say that what I'm seeing are the media companies, believe it or not, are doing the best. MTV, obviously, you've seen firsthand here today what they're doing, but we're seeing Reuters and Information Week and CNET are all in Second Life as well. And what they're doing is they're extending the concept of web-based content or their print content into a community, and I think that they're doing the best. The consumer companies, not so much, because they do not, as you pointed out, Tony, they don't get what this one-on-one type of community building is all about.
I think it's more of a question towards Second Life, where anybody can come in. At MTV and in Virtual Laguna Beach, Virtual Hills, we worked very closely with the sponsors, and it was a really carefully selected few. That being said, we try to make it like a real world. If a product can fit in the real world, it can most likely fit somehow in our virtual world. So I don't want to say that, but there are products, you know, and it's obviously it's a targeted demographic, so you're not going to sell, products for adults or for that don't fit the demographic. But I would say that most products can find some application or for some exposure at least, and possibly some use inside a virtual world.
This is probably just stating the obvious, but it does seem like it's going to be a brand or a product in which you can take advantage of this really unusual opportunity for interaction and engagement with people with the brand or the product. So, clothing, you can actually interact and engage with the product itself. MTV, you can't enter, or that's not a very good example, but there might be some that it's not the product, but somehow the brand, you are able to participate in it in some way that will make it useful. It's less useful if it's simply, I mean, this is just staying in the office, but if it's just billboarding a brand, that's not going to work. You want to somehow find a way to leverage that opportunity for engagement with the avatars.
Do you think that it some way relates to the issue of identity? So if the user can identify very closely in a very personal way with that brand in that space, is that the key?
Yeah,
to
I'd like to address that actually, because I think that, you know, if you're targeting identities, you have to have a certain cultural sensitivity and a certain contextual sensitivity. So you need to know when you go into these places, you know, why are you there? You know, what are you there to do? Who are you interacting with? And then, you know, there's nothing worse than a contextually inappropriate marketing effort or advertising effort. It can really ruin the experience of people who are there to do immersion. So, I mean, you know, the inclusion of Levi's launched with there, right? Yeah, so that was a good pairing, I think, you know. And anywhere where it's reasonable to put a product or brand or service that is contextually appropriate to a certain virtual world, those are the ones that work the best.
Let me just add one very quick thing on that. That I had been thinking that it was only where you can engage with a product. So you can put on Levi's, for example. And I was talking with somebody about Danone yogurt that's experimenting, and I don't know if they're in Second Life, but it's experimenting with this. And I thought, well, what a waste. You can't eat Danone yogurt, and so why would you want to market there? But I think something like yogurt is something that goes to a person's identity. It says something about the identity, either of the user or the avatar. There is a potential for an emotional relationship with that kind of food that makes it possible.
Thank you.
Thanks, Betsy.
Hi, my name is Corey. I work at IOTA, coming from the music industry. Very interested in the Laguna Beach thing. I was violently typing while we were. So at IOTA, we've gotten involved in Second Life because we represent 3,100 labels. So a lot of labels and bands are very interested in what's happening in Second Life. They read about Duran Duran touring and et cetera, et cetera. So we've been involved thanks to some outside companies and some help because I can't land properly yet in Second Life. I have operated a drummer. I helped put on a show and operated some drums. But we've done all these experiments, and I'm able to measure the success rate in Second Life, but what I'm having trouble figuring out is how to measure. Like I can see when I'm involved in one of these shows or whatever we do in Second Life, and I won't go into all the plugging. I can see if there's a surge of buy clicks, like we can see on websites, but buy clicks that go through to like iTunes or something, but it's hard to measure anything else about the success rate. And so because it's highly experimental and my job at IOTA is digital marketing and community management, I have to prove that this is valuable, that it's not just really cool because Wired Magazine did a Second Life article, and it's not just a fad.
Or Harvard Business Review.
Yeah. I and people like, you know, in my position and we have to prove that this is not just another fad, and it is media is doing well in the virtual world. In my experience, I've seen it do well, but I don't have enough statistics to prove it.
So
I just know it works.
I think, you know, that we're still trying to establish what the criteria for success might be, and each individual project is going to have its own, you know, success measurement. Maybe Eric, actually, since you brought up the Virtual Hills and all that, I mean, how do you guys?
I mean, we have. I'm trying to think, and this is probably, I will plug another conference, and I apologize, but Virtual Worlds 2007, where my boss will be there and talking more about data and statistics about the virtual worlds. But I think the number one is engagement. We always talk about engagement in virtual worlds and how long a time a person spends in there and how much.
That's one of the hardest things to measure, though. Engagement.
It is. I like the attention. If I can just sort of add to my question or whatever it is.
Sure.
I found that people or avatars or both, the union of, want to interact with artists, you know, regularly. And most bands don't know how to use these tools. I mean, not a lot of. I mean, come on. So, with the attention model, I was very interested in hearing that. But I guess I'm interrupting. But how do you measure attention? Is that streaming, or how do you measure attention in a virtual world?
It's
time spent in? I mean, we do have lots of reports about where people are in the world and what they're doing. Obviously, with lots of privacy, you know, restrictions on it and everything. But we can measure, you know, how long a person's logged in for, how long a person.
I don't think that measures attention, though, right? I mean, Lauren, like you guys have.
That was one of the things that we were talking about earlier. In Puzzle Pirates and Bang Howdy and in World, we have two kinds of currency. So there is an attention currency. So if you play games in Puzzle Pirates, you win pieces of eight. If you play games in Bang Howdy, you get script. If you play games or chat or interact with other players within the world, you get flow. And that's an attention currency. At least within the world, that's going to degrade rather quickly, which will encourage people to spend more time within the world. And that's only one kind of currency. There will be an exchange rate between that attention currency and the actual microcurrency, which for world will be gold. At least that's what we're calling it at the moment. So we do have a really good way of sort of measuring how long people spend within these worlds, how they interact within them, what they seem to enjoy doing, what no one's paying any attention to, so that we can craft a world that's more inviting, that basically people are using, that's useful.
And one last question. Is there any rule about identity if I use somebody else's identity as my avatar? Or let's say I build a Best Buy.
You mean like brand confusion stuff? Or
not even brand confusion. If I replicate a large, if I build a Walmart.
Well, are like you Walmart?
I'm not Walmart.
Okay. So, yeah, there'd be issues. I mean, there'd be trademark issues, right? And like
right.
trade dressing and all that sort of legal stuff.
And if I pretend that I'm my boss or somebody I met yesterday and I build an avatar that looks just like him, is there something to protect?
In Second Life, there's a terms of service or terms of use, and I'm pretty sure you're prohibited
covered.
From masquerading as somebody else, another real person.
Or a band, let's say.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's a bootleg U2 band in Second Life, you know, and they're not sanctioned by the band, you know. They've said, oh, we've written them a million times, no one's written us back. Shock. But, you know, so you can imitate other people. I think in Second Life you're not supposed to.
Okay. Thank you.
What about, you know, like some other worlds even maybe? Like what about, Eric, in the Virtual Hills, like can people masquerade as the characters?
As the cast, I mean, they can. We make it very clear who the cast is and who the cast is.
How do you do that? How do you denote who the cast is?
Well, it's in their avatar names. It's Hills Cast _ Lauren.
Right.
It's Lauren's name, and then we'll publicize their name, and we'll make it known that this is Lauren's avatar, and this is her, and this is where she'll be at this certain time. So it's... We do get questions about, is this her? And then we usually follow it up with videos like you saw or pictures. You know, we were there taking pictures that we try to put up right online, right immediately. It is a, you know, it's a question, but we haven't, the bands are the bands, the talented talent. It's a trust thing, I guess, is mostly what it is.
Okay. Does anyone else want to address that? Because
I was just going to say there's a kind of, couple of things about measurement. Don't overlook the offline power of influence on these as well. We look at time in world and number of registrants and all of that, but look at the offline that is tied in. Blogs, for example, I mean, it's very easy to go to Technorati and do a search and figure out who's talking about these particular worlds or your brand in world or these things. So please don't overlook the World Wide Web. Also, just about copyright, there's a body doubles shop, for example, in Second Life where you can buy an avatar that looks like a particular celebrity. And if you're kind of interested in following that, another blog that I'm going to recommend is one called Virtually Blind. It's an IP attorney who's writing about all of these things that are happening in virtual worlds, and he has some very interesting things to say about that. And thirdly, as a brand, you're going to have to start expanding. If we've been marketing to these people and wanting them to take our brand into their identity, you know, the type of car that we drive or the perfume that we wear, we have spent incredible amounts of money doing this. So do not be surprised that when we go into a world where we can create anything that we want to incorporate your brand and your logo. And you're going to have to start expanding your definition of what is a copyright infringement as we move forward in this. Is that something that you want or don't want? So as we talk about identity, those are issues.
Okay, just before we move on, just one sec. We're running, we've got like 4 minutes left. I just wanted to say, if anyone has to duck out, please fill in the comment card, because it's a way that we can evaluate how you like these panels or don't like them, and it helps improve the panels for next year. I think we're safe going a little over time, because there's no other panels in here after. Is that, no? Yes? There's a lunch break. Yeah, okay. So we'll try to get to the rest of your questions as quickly as we can.
Hi, I'm Robin Benefield with DiscoveryChannel.com. I have a question about the value in creating a virtual world outside of Second Life versus inside Second Life. Kind of what was your thought process for MTV and any other company that might be considering doing something like that?
We evaluated lots of different companies, and we found that McKenna got the brand, and that we could. In Second Life, we were taking this audience that wasn't a real tech audience, wasn't an online audience, was a massive audience of teenage girls, pretty much. And we weren't comfortable, I guess, you know, at the time. This was almost over a year ago. With the high barriers to entry on Second Life. And it's proven successful. I love Second Life. It's amazing. There's amazing places in it, and there's amazing people doing amazing things. We didn't feel it was right for MTV at the time.
From a marketing perspective, do you think that limits the number of people that you're reaching, or do you think it's okay that you're just, you know, you've funneled in through the people that you know your fan base and that
yeah,
kind of thing?
I mean, I don't know.
Concentrate on your market. Go after the platform that has your market. Don't look at it as a mass market,
okay,
because these are not mass markets. Look at who you're trying to reach and then evaluate the platform based on the technological features that you need as well as the market that you're trying to reach.
Or you can even build your own. There's the folks who did the Pussycat Doll Lounge, which is now just called The Lounge, and that's very, very targeted micro world for, it's just like a social world. There's really not a whole lot to do there except engage with the brand. So they have, they started out with Pussycat Dolls. Now they have a DJ that spins. I think it's all Universal Music. And they just opened up like a Tyra Banks Lounge too. So these are very, very targeted, and they know who they're getting, right? It's mostly kids and teens. So
I just want to add, I'm sure there's going to be people building virtual malls with real world stores in them that you won't need to go to Second Life. You'll just go to the mall and you'll choose to go there.
Hi. It seems to me that marketers and agencies and people who control certainly a lot of the money and attention behind advertising like two things. They like very sort of like IAB standard things that I can throw a whole ton of money at and populate the web, and these very, very cutting edge, bleeding edge, so they can say, hey, we're the first retail store in Second Life and that sort of thing. You know, how mainstream does this stuff eventually become in terms of virtual worlds, and are there certain levels at which, you know, if there's never more than 100,000 people logging into Second Life at one time, to 3 years from now, where everybody sort of give up on it and say, oh, well, this isn't an experiment anymore. It's just not panning out.
There's other places besides Second Life, right? So there may only be 100,000 people in Second Life, but, you know, where are the rest of them? Some of them are in Virtual Hills. Some of them are in Pussycat Dolls Lounge. Some of them are in World. Some of them are in Puzzle Pirates or whatever. So, I mean, you know, if one doesn't succeed, something else is going to come up, you know, for sure.
Also, how many are at LandsEnd.com or... countless people. So you make that a 3D space. You add in the opportunity to take your avatar and shop with other avatars instead of just punching a button and buying something. And suddenly horizons open up that we haven't even begun to think about yet.
And one other thing, concurrently, just using Second Life again, is, you know, we have 20 to 30,000 concurrently in Second Life. Just contextually, Amazon would kill for that many concurrent users. Hmm. So kind of think about this in terms, again, of what you're trying to achieve. And it's not a mass audience.
I work for MoveOn.org, and so it's, you know, progressive politics. And I guess, just a question for you guys is, you're trying to get people to spend real-world dollars. We're trying to get people to take real-world political action, whether it be to sign a petition or give money to a candidate, but things that can actually move the political... create political outcomes in the in Congress or wherever. And so I'm wondering if there's anything that you've run across that you know, we're looking at this space and wondering, you know, what is there here for us? We primarily act with our users through email and the web. What lessons have you learned in marketing that might apply to this kind of parallel space, or are there people doing things that you would point us to, or whatever?
Well, thinking about sort of what we're trying to create, we're not solely looking for a marketing space. We're also looking for a social networking space. And part of what's inspired World has been the amazing runaway success of MySpace, which I like to call MySpaz because it's so hideous in so many ways and so useful, and everyone uses it. And we are very much following the model of allowing many points of entry and letting people make it as ugly as they want to, because that seems to be amazingly virally popular. One of the things that you can do within that space is create groups. You can create forums. You can network with people, and that wouldn't necessarily all be about, oh, let's talk about fluffy bunnies. That could be, let's talk about trying to vote in Democrats. That could be about all sorts of other things. And I think that getting into those spaces and creating some sort of group or forum, some sort of virtual space that's actually enticing and active, that's a really good way to draw people in who wouldn't necessarily want to be on your mailing list and wouldn't necessarily go to the Move On website, but might actually already be in some other online space. And there is a way of reaching them that way.
Did that address your question at all? Sure. I mean, I think you need to know what you're going to get yourself into, right? So, you know, what are your goals? You know, what do you want to get out of a virtual world? So look at the options. It's like what we said before, whether it's a persuasive effort for political reasons or it's a marketing effort. I mean, you really need to acclimate yourself to the space. You need to know what goes on there, what the culture is like, because the worst thing you can do is to go in there with this attitude like, we're here to colonize the space and, you know, come join us. You know, it's the other way around. You're joining them.
Right.
I would also say that if you're looking for people to spend money in a lot of these spaces where they're already doing that for various reasons, if there is enough of a community that's created there, I don't think it would be difficult to make the leap out of that virtual world and into actually spending dollars. So,
thanks.
Hi, my name is Chris Fullman, emerging technologist for AgencyNet. A brief little timeline. I started playing NCSoft's City of Heroes, and I know that they had it was in your face, but it was subtle advertising. I believe it was for NVIDIA when it first came out. And then I know that Microsoft had bought a company that...
Massive.
Right, that was specifically made for placing these type of advertisements and creating these partnerships with the developers to get the kind of co-branding in there. Then I'll even include MySpace, because it's technically not a virtual world, but it's an avatar-based marketing where you create your own space, and then you get your friends, and then you start to notice that the bands came in, movie sites started marketing to you, TV shows, now you get, you know, the adult industry that are sending you spam. Do you see, and we got a little foreshadow of the spoof, the Apple Store on Second Life, where I'm not sure if they took it down yet, but do you see where this could potentially lead to where it could fizzle out very quickly, where it becomes just all of a sudden these corporations are coming in and they're just throwing messaging left and right and the user almost feels alienated? Do you see best practices where you could try to optimize the marketing where we could use it, but you just want to avoid turning the user off and frustrating them?
Well, don't spam people. I mean, that's a really basic, you know, principle.
I hope nobody in here spams.
No, but I mean, it's, you know...
It can happen. It probably will.
You can't really be super in your face in these spaces. I think it's good to have kind of a... Not necessarily a huge fanfare to being there, you know? Go in knowing what you're getting into. Go in, you know, not necessarily overcautiously, but don't go in there like guns a-blazing either, right? So, I mean, I think it works against people to do too much messaging.
It really does. And this is the secret, by the way, and this is the secret of all social media, but especially in virtual worlds. If as a brand you can build something that connects people to each other, you will have a success. The problem is we're all trying to connect the consumer to our brand. Mm-hmm. And what you need to do is connect people to each other. That is the virtual social world. And that takes some creativity and a little bit of switch in thinking about the brand. But, you know, let's get rid of the advertising mentality in these worlds because it does not work.
Thank you.
That's your short answer.
I just had a question about with Virtual World Second Life or whatever it would be, as they try to become the 3D internet, which a lot of times you read that they're trying to do, at what point are you co-opting the community and rather than co-opting the community as it grows so astronomically and you're less marketing towards the community, you're marketing towards anyone that would casually use it?
Maybe
the question would be, how does the marketing strategy change? Rather than marketing to a resident, you're marketing to a casual person that's using this 3D space to the 3D advantage.
I think you have to do different levels. You have to have a platform that can accommodate from a new user to a visitor, who's somebody who wants to just casually visit, who for instance, Virtual Hills, we kind of have levels of engagement with our users, and we don't really purport to be any of the 3D web as Second Life might. But, you know, there's events for new users, there's events for first-time users, there's events for...
And the whole entry point is branded, right? So, like, I mean, this is something that you can do in Virtual Laguna Beach is you wouldn't know it's in there. You know, you wouldn't know it's actually using another platform, and they're trying to roll that out with Second Life with this registration API where you will have your own gateway into Second Life. So, I think with virtual world spaces, you're going to want to broaden the access points, and it's not even possible anymore to target the community in a lot of these spaces because they're getting so large. So you have to look at like what subgroups are there, what are the main traffic points, like in there. I think you can teleport in there, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, if there are places where you can only walk around, then, you know there's bottlenecks, there's certain traffic points where you can be, the Pussycat Dolls Lounge is like that, everyone walks around, so there's branding in specific places. But, we have to see how these spaces evolve, right? So it's not the 3D internet yet by a long shot, and the closer it gets, I think the better ideas we'll have about how to tackle those spaces. Let me just ask the organizers here, are we good to keep going for a couple more minutes, or... Okay, so let's take one more question, and then if anyone's got any questions, you can come on up and ask us, I guess.
Do you think all the sort of high-end media talk about advertising in YouTube and Second Life is preparing, or not Second Life, but YouTube and MySpace and other places like that, is preparing the consumers or the users who are in Second Life for the fact that, right now corporations are sort of sneaking into Second Life and doing a little thing, but do you think it's preparing them for the fact that they are going to be constantly marketed to?
I think that's an after effect. I mean, it's a side effect anyway. It's companies are already, piling in like crazy.
But do you think the users are prepared for that, hearing all the stuff that's been going
on
with YouTube?
It used to be a big deal because, sorry to keep coming back to Second Life, but I mean, it used to be a big deal in the sense that the first company that started doing outside marketing in Second Life it was hugely controversial, right? Mm-hmm. Now people don't even bat an eyelash. So, good. I mean, I've even stopped writing about it, It's inevitable, right? It's ad creep.
Absolutely.
It's marketing creep. So I don't know. Does anyone want to address that one?
Well, I think that the more and more experiments and the more and more brands get in there, yeah, that they will. And the better brands get at marketing to avatars and doing better things. It's not only, I think, been a learning experience for consumers, but it's been a learning experience for a lot of brands as well and how to do this. And whether it's a first wave or whatever, they'll be better and better, and they'll be more engaging as time goes on. So good, it is, get more used to it, and I think they want it. I think there is a desire to have some real world kind of substance in the virtual world. It's not all fantasy worlds, but they want to have stuff that reflects their real life, and so they'll be accepting of it when it's done right.
Well, I think that's really what it comes down to, is doing it right. One of the things that we definitely want is for our community to be able to vote things up and down. So nothing's going to be forced upon them. If you create avatars or furniture or something else to go into the catalog on world.com, and it just fucking sucks, it's getting pulled down. Or it'll get voted down. No one will ever see it. It won't float to the top. And the idea is that people make really compelling content, and it doesn't matter who that is. So that can be a huge corporation, or that can be just some Flash developer sitting at home. The idea is that all content will be worthwhile.
Thanks, Lauren, and thanks all the panelists for coming, and thank you for attending.
Tony.
Please fill out your comment cards so we can get more of this kind of stuff next year if you're into it. Thanks.